And we are the Nonprofits. Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Jeff D. My co-host, Dennis Lube.
Howdy.
And producer, Russell Blatter.
Hello.
It is September 11, 2004. Wow.
Uh-huh.
How about that?
3 years to the day.
Indeed.
And the Republicans are still milking it for all it's worth.
For everything.
Boy, are they ever.
Yep.
How many people died in the towers? What is the official total?
In the towers?
Total? Yeah.
Or in all the... I mean, in the planes and in
all
the
right,
Pentagon
fine. All
stuff.
The all in all the in all the terrorist attacks.
Wasn't it like 3,000?
3,000,
like 6,000.
Yeah.
And how many is Bush killed so far? We just topped 2,000, right?
Well, we just went over the line of 1,000 American soldiers.
A 1,000,
but uncountable Iraqi. Good grief!
Some of whom were probably bad.
Some
and some of,
but
of course, you'd also
all.
Have to say that some of the Americans in the towers were probably bad. I mean,
well, yeah, but
at least in the prison,
yeah. Wow. Okay. So 3 years later, the terrorists still had by 1,000 victims.
And it was my birthday 2 days ago. I'm going to be forever cursed with a birthday right before people are making a big deal about it.
Happy birthday.
Indeed.
You could probably, if you worked it right, you could probably get your birthday cakes in the shape of, like, you know, two tall towers.
Oh, could I please?
That would be great.
Because I really want my birthday associated with that.
Well, you know, if you didn't want that, you shouldn't have been born on that day.
I'm sorry. I'll plan better in the next life.
I'd like to take us all back to the glorious days of yesteryear.
Oh, I wish I had flashback music, you know.
That's interesting. We all came up with slightly different flashback music. You remember when this first happened? Some of us weren't as aware as we are now of quite how horrible the Bush administration is.
Right.
Not yet.
No.
And we were still kind of hoping.
We had the Kyoto Treaty breakup, and we had the threat impending faith-based initiatives, and we had Enron. But...
Yeah. But there's always something. I mean, we hadn't really arrived in the land of...
Insanity.
That we're in now. Yeah, exactly. Like, I remember specifically when Bush first came out and made his statement of, you know, this is, he was trying to downplay the direct influence of Islam. Mm-hmm. I actually thought, okay, well, I'm actually glad to hear that from this religious wacko president, because I wouldn't want this to turn into an overtly religious war.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's one thing, I think, it's one thing to be cautious about how you phrase stuff. And, you know, Bush went right on and wasn't cautious when he wanted to make it, you know, what's it, Operation Crusade.
Right. Yeah.
Infinite
God bless
justice.
America.
Infinite justice.
All
you know, those things. He wasn't terribly cautious then. But, you know, it's one thing to be cautious, because, you know, caution, you're carefully choosing your words, that's all good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm concerned that in all, that since then, I've gotten very concerned that we've wandered away from just wanting to be safe and cautious when we talked about the influence of the Muslim religion in these events, into... you know, really seriously losing track of what the hell exactly went on.
Right.
Let me give you, an example. This is back from, you know, shortly after 9/11. Ashcroft invokes religion in U.S. War on Terror. Attorney General John D. Ashcroft cast the government's war on terror in religious terms, arguing that the campaign is rooted in faith in God and urging Christians, Jews, and Muslims to unite in the effort. Contrasting, here he's lumping them all together, right?
Right.
It's saying...
Why doesn't he just say
it's
all
good
Americans?
Versus evil,
but no,
therefore
he
it's it's all good religion versus
all bad
evil.
Religion. Yeah.
Well, they
or not religion, right?
Yeah.
Versus evil. Yeah.
Contrasting the way of God and the way of the terrorists, Ashcroft's speech to a group of Christian broadcasters in Nashville included some of the most explicitly religious remarks from the Attorney General since he was confirmed amid controversy over his views more than a year before. Quote, "Civilized people, Muslims, Christians, and Jews, all understand that the source of freedom and human dignity is the Creator." Now, first of all, I guess there's no civilized people besides Muslims, Christians, and Jews?
Apparently not.
That's... Here he's trying to make nice and insulting another group of people in the same
way. Right.
I'm sure they'll buy into that real big in India.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ashcroft said this in prepared remarks released by the Justice Department. Quote, "Civilized people of all religious faiths are called to the defense of his creation." Once again... You just ignored, say, India.
Any polytheistic religions.
And polytheistic religions in general. "We are a nation called to defend freedom, a freedom that is not the grant of any government or document, but is our endowment from God."
We are called?
Yeah.
I don't feel called.
Ashcroft, the son and grandson of Pentecostal ministers, has not shied away from overt public displays of religious faith. But he has shied away from fessing up about the whole Calico Cats thing.
Yeah.
The Attorney General holds daily prayer meetings in his office at the Justice Department headquarters in Washington and has made several appearances at Christian events since taking office. Those remarks revived criticism from civil liberties advocates alarmed by Ashcroft's religious views and did little to quell complaints from Arab American and Muslim leaders about a controversial statement about Islam attributed to Ashcroft by a syndicated columnist. Cal Thomas quoted Ashcroft from an earlier interview as saying that, quote, "Islam is a religion in which God requires you to send your son to die for him. Christianity is a faith in which God sends his son to die for you." Oh, Ashcroft said in a statement last week that the reported remarks, quote, "do not accurately reflect what I believe I said." Well, come on. That is, in fact, I mean, Christians were all over that, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember when he that statement was attributed to him, and the fundamentalists were all like, "Yeah! What's all this crap about Muslims and Christians being together under God against the terrorists?" Rather than allaying our concerns, these comments only raise more concerns, James Zogby, president of the Washington-based Arab American Institute, said. "It is fine that he is a man of faith, but the Attorney General, who represents all people, seems to be projecting himself as a religious leader." Well, okay, fine.
Yeah.
But I'm not here to talk about our elected officials and appointed officials casting themselves as religious leaders. I want to talk about this question of, well, is Islam, real Islam, a good religion or a bad religion? Ashcroft seems to want to have it both ways, depending on who he's talking to.
Well, are there good religions?
That's a damn good question! But let's focus on Islam for now. I have some information here about the terrorists themselves, which was not... I recall when this information was released to the public,
yeah.
But as far as I can tell, people did not pay that much attention. See, these terrorists had a letter with them giving them instructions on how to pull this off. And here's some comments and some quotes. One of the copies was found inside a suitcase belonging to Mohammed Atta, whom investigators said was aboard American Flight 11, the first airplane to crash into the World Trade Center. Atta's suitcase did not make it aboard the doomed jetliner and was recovered... Damn those baggage handlers! ...and was recovered by FBI investigators in Boston, Massachusetts. Another was found at Dulles International Airport near Washington in a vehicle belonging to Nawaf al-Zami, one of the suspected hijackers aboard American Airlines Flight 77, which crashed into the Pentagon. The third was discovered in the wreckage of United Airlines Flight 93. That jet crashed into a field in rural Pennsylvania after what investigators believe may have been an attack on the hijackers by passengers on board that plane. Yeah, they later confirmed that. Okay, here's Ashcroft again. Let me make it clear that while this letter contains a number of religious references, I do not believe it to be representative of Muslims or the Islamic faith.
What? Huh?
Okay. Now, this is the guy who, now, from that previous article, he was privately telling other religious pals that Islam is evil and tells people to go out to kill, and then publicly making these bland statements about how all truly civilized monotheistic people are united against the terrorists, and the terrorists themselves were not religious. So he says it contains a number of religious references. I want to share with you what that number is. Okay. The translation of this letter that was available on the internet, might still be if you search around for it. Here's terms that occur and how many times they came up in a spell checker, right?
Does it mention how long the letter was?
No, actually. That's a good point.
That is a good point.
I think when you hear the actual numbers,
the numbers are pretty, speak for themselves.
Infidel, twice.
That
surprises me.
Something like 3 to 5 pages.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Infidel only occurs twice in the document. Angel occurs twice. Reward occurs twice. Evil twice. And not in the context of go and do this evil thing.
No.
No, it's go and kill those evil Americans.
Evil Americans, right.
Devil, 2 times. Promised, 3 times. Martyr or martyrdom, 3 times. Servant, 3 times. Believer, 3 times. Worship, 3 times. Pious, 3 times. Paradise, 4 times. Soul, 4 times. Quran, 4 times. Heaven, 5 times. Obey or obedience, 5 times. Non-believer, 6 times. Faith or faithful, 7 times. Lord, 7 times. Bless, blessed or blessings, 8 times. Pray or prayer, 9 times. Prophet, P-H-E-T, like us, non-profits, right. So they're talking about, supposedly an exoprimate. 17 times.
Right.
Supplication, i.e. prayer, 18 times.
Hmm.
And God, how many pages again? How many pages again?
Three to five pages, I think.
God, the word God appears 88 times.
Oh.
God.
But Ashcroft said,
God.
The letter contains a number of religious references, 88.
Yeah.
No, that
just that one word.
Gods, yeah.
But not representative of the Muslims or Islamic faith. Yeah, because those guys never talk about their God.
Right.
Or infidels.
Mm-hmm.
Or their prophet.
Blessings and peace be upon him, yeah.
Here's some actual sections from it. The letter tells the hijackers to remember the battle of the prophet against the infidels. When the hijackers entered the planes, they were implored to say, O God, open all doors for me. O God who answers prayers and answers those who ask you, I am asking you for your help. There is no God but God. I mean, there's God 4 times in the space of one sentence.
Mm-hmm.
One run-on sentence, but still, one sentence.
Yeah. Also, there is no God but God is kind of a trite phrase, even though it cramps in
okay,
God.
Fine. But even, of course, right. Even if that was the case, right, that's still 44 references to God in 3 to 5 pages. It adds, when the plane moves on its way and you come to the moment of close combat, then strike like heroes who do not want to come back to Earth. Say, Allahu Akbar, God is great, because you will instill terror in the infidel. Pray and wash before you leave.
Wash?
So, yeah.
Wash.
make sure you're wearing clean
underwear.
You want
to go clean. You want to go clean.
When you have washed for prayer, angels will ask God to forgive you, and angels will pray for you, it said. You should not appear confused and nervous, but joyful, happy, relaxed, tranquil, because you are carrying out an action that God loves.
Mm-hmm. Soinks.
Now, you know...
This is not a simple...
First of all, it is just disingenuous to suggest that the terrorists were not religious.
Right.
Okay. This is, I mean, this is religion.
They are clearly religious.
It's disingenuous to suggest they were not Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were Muslims.
Yeah.
So then the question is this like, you know, proper Islam, or is it some perverted kind of Islam, which is the, you know, the final refuge of those people that don't want to face facts.
True Islam.
Oh. True Islam.
And you know what? I don't know. Because I don't know that much about it. Do you guys?
Nope.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter?
Doesn't matter. Is there an objective test to determine whether someone is a Muslim or not? If there isn't, then anyone who calls themselves one is one.
For all intents and purposes. I agree. I mean, this is the kind of thing that comes up all the time on alt atheism.
Yeah.
With people saying, you know, you bring up some guy.
Some horrible thing a Christian has done.
And they say, he wasn't a true Christian.
Well, how do you know?
Well, he did something wrong. Right. Oh, I see. So, that's like, I mean, if we said everybody who did something wrong in the United States isn't a true American, we'd have a much smaller population than we have now.
Clearly,
right.
You know,
according to Ashcroft,
yeah,
the guys who flew the planes were not Muslim. They were not. They were not even Middle Eastern. They were Scottish, obviously. And they were playing bagpipes the whole damn time.
Right. The no true Scotsman.
No true Scotsman fallacy
is the analogy often brought up on alt atheism when people try to play
he's not a true Scotsman.
That's right.
Right.
If he puts sugar on his pork.
You can't get away if you have a big group like this and you want to identify real members of it, then somewhere, clearly, when you form your organization, write down what the rules are going to be about how you tell the difference between a member and a non-member, right?
Yeah.
It's like if they're if they join the group and they're on your membership list or they follow the same holy book and they, you know, 99% of what they do is all in line with your religion, and you can't just, when they get caught doing something wrong, brush them off and disavow any connection to them
right. Just
because they did something wrong.
It's like your grandmother
saying, that's not fair.
It's like your grandmother saying, I'm a Nazi. And you go, Mom, how can you say that? They killed all those people. Oh, those weren't real Nazis. What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
That is
a shell game. And a thing I love to point out to Christians is, you know, if you are a Christian, you better not get caught doing anything wrong.
Right.
Because all of your supposed friends will immediately turn on you.
Mm-hmm.
They will immediately disavow your very Christianity.
Well,
if you get caught.
Sometimes. We have another story today, later on.
Yes, that's true. Okay, not always. But in the vast majority of cases, that is the way it is played. You play the they're not a true Christian. Yeah, you play the no, they're not a true Christian card so you can ignore things like, oh, the Crusades, those weren't true Christians.
No.
You know, and the witch hunts. You know, those weren't true Christians.
I was just, out of perverse interest, reading Lee Strobel's The Case for Faith this past week.
Yeah.
And he, in his chapter about bad things that Christianity may have done, he actually claimed that during the witch hunts, the people who were being burned as witches were the true Christians, and while the people doing the burning were the atheists.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Right, we've kind of moved on to the question of are these true Muslims, you know, but by analogy, it just looks like that claim is the same as the claim that Christians make when a Christian does something wrong.
Right.
And, producer, I have just accidentally bumped my microphone.
Oh, well, keep talking. Sorry, we have...
It's just not... That's court. Just not fair. If you have an organization, have a membership list, and then if somebody's on your membership list, then... They're a member. If you don't have a membership list, and all you've got is a set of beliefs, anybody who says they have that set of beliefs, that's one of you.
That's one
I'm
of them,
sorry.
Yeah.
If it makes you look bad, not our fault.
Well, you know, I think we've heard in the past, I can't remember when, but I've heard that
all we have to judge you by.
Consider people as part of the Catholic Church unless they're excommunicated.
Uh-huh.
Which means that all the members the members of the atheist community of Austin,
yeah,
purely for head counting purposes,
yeah,
anyone who is an atheist but used to be a Catholic,
uh-huh,
is still considered a
mm-hmm
Catholic by the church.
Yeah, it's not just Catholic churches that do that, by the mm-hmm way. As I am led to understand that most churches do not strike people from their roles without some special, you know, reason, like, oh, they got caught doing something wrong, so that they can claim much bigger attendance than they actually have.
Yeah.
Because that makes them seem impressive. So, all right. So, I don't know enough about Islam still.
Right.
Which is kind of odd, because I was sort of curious after 9/11.
Yeah.
But it's not something I've gotten around to doing a lot of research on. But
well, if you try to figure out things about Islam, what drives them, what makes them tick, you're
yeah
accused of sympathizing with them.
We have a story about that, too.
But then, look at the countries that are steeped in Islam.
Yeah.
And how they behave.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, like Saudi Arabia,
right?
It
seems kind of lunatic to me.
Like Saudi Arabia, for example, where uh-huh they had that incident where there was a girls' school on fire,
yeah,
and because the girls were not properly dressed to go out in public, they locked them inside the building to die.
Right.
Right. But...
I say they're a bunch of frickin' savages.
But, I mean, that's just the world today, because a thousand years ago in the Middle Ages, Islamic countries were the center
yeah,
of culture
of learning
and
yes,
mathematics.
That's
yes,
true. And then what happened? They had
the
a big...
Christians were benighted.
They were the center of science and learning, and then they had a big fundamentalist awakening, and that put an end to that.
That's it.
Back,
right,
you know, before
so,
the Middle Ages.
So I think there is something
to be said. That's what
Islam
is now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there is something to be said, though, for drawing a distinction between people who are Islamic or Christian simply because that's what they've been told all their lives and haven't given a lot of deep thought to the ultimate
mm-hmm
ramifications of it,
yeah,
versus the people who believe in it strongly enough that they would die for the principle.
Mm.
I think your average rank-and-file Christian and your average rank-and-file Muslim doesn't take things that far. Now, I mean, you know, that still leaves the problem
well,
of those
true
things existing in the first place.
Yes, that leads to the question of what's really in the teachings. And
but
again, we're not going to be able to get too far into Islam, but I now want to take this in the direction
and these
of
people,
what's really in the teachings of Christianity.
And they
yeah
don't stand against those people that take the religion to the horrible extremes.
Sometimes they do.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've got some examples here. But
okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Also, just one more thing before we start looking at, for example, what's really in the Christian teachings.
Yeah.
I love to point out to fundamentalists who, on the one hand, claim that their religion must be true because more than a third of the world's population is Christian.
Right.
Right. That's the single largest individual religious group. At the same time, they will say, well, Catholics aren't true Christians. But when you write off Catholics,
whoa,
Christianity is
there
this tiny,
huge
tiny,
chunk,
tiny little, you know, 6-8% cult,
you know,
amongst all the world's citizens. So, all right. So the Bible. On the one hand, Ashcroft is trying to play nice and say, it's all good.
Right.
But in private, he says, oh, no, Christianity is nice, but Islam is evil. But is Christianity really nice? Let's go through.
I think we know the answer to that.
Let's take a little test. What punishment did God say is mandatory for an unruly child? Is it? And you can play out there in the chat room, too. Is it?
No, they can't.
There's can't they?
Like two of them.
Oh.
What is going on?
Well,
I don't know if we've listed names.
I don't know if we've mentioned this. They all seem to be absent. The Atheist Network, as we speak today on September 11th, is down. And I've sent a message to the chat room indicating what private stream you can connect to listen to us anyway. But because the Atheist Network is down, a lot of people seem to be logged in but not listening, not paying attention.
And how many people are actually listening to our stream? Do we know that?
It looks like two or three.
All right. All right.
Hi.
So,
you guys.
So you can play at home listening to this show, you know, on
the replay.
On demand, on the replay. You can still answer this for yourselves and then get the real answer. What punishment did God say is mandatory for an unruly child? Is it A, none? God is loving and forgiving and doesn't believe in punishing children. B, mandatory timeouts. C, stoning to death. Or D, deprivation of privileges, grounding. Anybody got a guess?
I know.
What is it?
Death.
Stoning them.
Stoning to death. Correct.
All death.
And they shall say unto the elders of his city, This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of his city shall stone him with stones that he die. Deuteronomy 21:20-21.
That solves that problem.
And I got a fundy in a message board to admit that he still supports that once.
Yeah, well, we've seen that book. Well, he still supposes, what, supports the stoning to death?
Yeah. He says, what's wrong with stoning? Why should I be offended by stoning? Because it makes you feel bad?
Wow.
He also agreed to that punishment for adulterous spouses.
Yeah, cool.
Well, I haven't got there yet. Hang on.
I'm sorry.
That was Deuteronomy 20,
oh, that was
21.
Spoiler warning.
Verse 20 to 21. It's also in, there's something to the same effect in the New Testament in Mark 7:10. That is, for Moses said, honor thy father and thy mother. Whoso curseth father and mother, let him die the death.
Hey, there you go.
Mark 7:10. And also, it's in Exodus 21:15 and Exodus 21:17. What is God's punishment for women who wear showy jewelry and clothing? Is it A, God does not believe women should be punished for a flashy appearance? B, a strong admonition against such vanity? C, ugliness, misery, and death? Or D, none of the above?
Ooh.
It's easy for us. Atheists, you just always take the most horrible one. It's ugliness, misery, and death. In that day, the Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet and their calls and their round tires like the moon. I don't know what that means.
Wow!
The chains and the bracelets and the mufflers, the bonnets, the ornaments of the legs and the headbands and the tablets and the earrings, the rings and nose
they have
jewels.
Round tires and mufflers.
This is back when they didn't have generic terms for stuff.
Yeah.
The changeable suits of a parable and the mantles and the wimples and the crisping pins and the glasses, the fine linen, the hoods, and the veils.
The glasses?
I think they mean drinking glasses.
Oh, okay.
And those little tinsel things that they hang from their lips.
And it shall come to pass that instead of sweet smell, here there shall be stink. And instead of a girdle, a rent. And instead of well-set hair, baldness. And instead of a stomacher, a girding of sackcloth. A burning instead of beauty. The men shall fall by the sword, and they might, and thy might in the war. And her gates shall them lament and mourn. She being desolate shall sit upon the ground. Isaiah 3:17-26. What is God's punishment for those who overeat?
They shall be large.
Is it A, none? God doesn't believe people should be punished for overeating. B, death by plague. C, health problems caused by obesity. Or D, depression and feelings of guilt.
I'm starting to detect a pattern here. I'm going to go with B.
Death by plague, you called it. And the people stood up all that day and all that night and all the next day, and they gathered the quails. He that gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them all abroad for themselves round the camp, and while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord smote the people with a very great plague.
Yeah.
There's also another reference to a similar thing in Psalms 78:31. What did Jesus say happens to those who have premarital sex, Russell? Is it
death by stoning?
A, nothing. While the Lord does not condone this, he doesn't punish people for doing it. B, frequent performers were struck with venereal disease. Sorry, I can't talk today. C, they cannot enter heaven, so they must wind up in hell. Or D, they have difficulty coping in loving relationships. Ha, it's not stoning.
Oh.
Not this reference, anyway.
Maybe that's only for women.
Is it VD, you can't go to heaven, so you go to hell, or you have difficulty coping in your loving relationship? I'll throw the question open. Dennis?
Oh, well, I'm going to say you have to go to hell.
You have to go to hell, correct.
You have to go to hell to be tortured forever.
That's 4 for 4 so far, Dennis.
you just choose the worst thing.
Know ye not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Be not deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor abusers of themselves with mankind, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revelers, nor extortioners shall inherit the kingdom
of
God.
Shall prevent us from delivering the mail. That's the motto of the U.S. Postal Service.
What is the...
Here's your mail. I'm effeminate.
What is the punishment for a single mother having a boy out of wedlock? A. None. B. The woman may become barren. C. God will be disappointed, and that is punishment enough. Or D. The woman may not be punished, but the child and his descendants will burn in hell.
Ooh. Any cover? I'm going to say the last one.
Correct. A bastard shall not enter the congregation of the Lord.
It's his fault.
Even to his 10th generation shall he not enter into the congregation of the Lord. Deuteronomy 23, verse 2. Now, I don't care who goes to hell and who doesn't, because there's no such place. But you got to remember, going to hell is like the sign that you are a horrible, horrible person. Yes, you're just a horrible, bad person. You have no rights. You have no – there is no human decency or dignity for you. You get cast into the flaming pit. 6. What has God done in the past to children who make fun of unattractive people? A. Nothing. God understands the immaturity and indiscretion of toddlers. B. He makes them feel guilty about their taunting, inducing them to apologize and repent. C. He sends an angel to tell them all of us have characteristics that others find unattractive. Or D. He sends bears to maul the children to death. So we all know this one.
Well, yeah.
I don't think the ranger's going to like this.
D, and he went up from thence into Bethel, and as he was going up by the way, there came forth little children out of the city, and mocked him, and said unto him, Go up, thou bald head, go up, thou bald head. And he turned back and looked on them, and cursed them in the name of the Lord. And there came forth 2 she-bears out of the wood, and tare 42 children of them.
Hey, boo-boo.
Gee, Yogi.
Yeah.
Can we go get...
How would you like
to go get a picnic basket? No, let's just eat the kids.
The cursed kid. God said so. I had a long, heated argument with a fundamentalist on our TV show about this. He claimed that little children meant, you know, anybody less than full adult age, whatever that was. So that was probably, you know...
Teenagers.
It does say something about them being a drunkard in the Bible.
Them? No.
The people who are getting stoned to death.
This is the children and the bears.
I'm talking about this one specifically. Yeah. They also claimed that the tear, T-A-R-E, the thing the bears did to the kids, that just means scratching.
Oh.
To death.
No, it doesn't say to death.
Okay.
7. What punishment did God... actually, it does say to death. Sorry.
Oh, God, well...
What punishment did God promise for promiscuous women? This could be the stones one.
Slap on the wrist?
A. Nothing. B. Cut off their noses and ears, burn them in fire, take their children and strip them naked. C. They lose interest in sex, thereafter recognizing the foolishness of their ways. Or D. They become depressed and lonely.
Huh.
Oh, gosh. Well, what's the most brutal and savage one?
That would be B.
Oh, that's the one.
B.
I don't know. Losing interest in sex seems a close second.
And I will set my jealousy against thee, and that they shall deal furiously with thee. They shall take away thy nose and thine ears, and thy remnant shall fall by the sword. They shall take thy sons and thy daughters, and thy residue shall be devoured by the fire. They shall also strip thee out of thy clothes and take away thy fair jewels. Thus will I make thy lewdness to cease from thee, and thy whoredom brought from the land of Egypt, so that thou shalt not lift up thine eyes unto them, nor remember Egypt any more.
Wow.
So apparently, Egypt was a party in town.
Ah.
And they remembered that it was fun, and so God had to cut off their noses. Ace.
And burn them in fire.
Yeah, sure.
And then we'll kill you.
I'm sorry. I'm stuck on the noses thing. What does God demand happen to those couples who have sex during the woman's time of the month?
Whoa.
A, absolutely nothing. B, they will conceive a child during intercourse. C, they are banished from society and not permitted to interact with civilized people. Or D, they'll have nightmares and unpleasant thoughts for a while.
Well, this one is relatively mild. They're just banished from civilized society.
That is correct. And if a man shall lie with a woman having her sickness.
Sickness.
This is God talking. Apparently, this thing, which we now know
God
is a normal biological
realize,
process,
yeah.
God knew first it was a disease. A woman having her sickness and shall uncover her nakedness. He hath discovered her fountain, and she hath uncovered the fountain of her blood, and both of them shall be cut off from among their people. Leviticus 20, verse 18. What punishment does God mandate for a man who rapes a virgin? A. The rapist
punishment.
Shall be stoned to death. Russell. B. The rapist shall be beaten, then burned alive. C. The rapist shall be imprisoned. D. The rapist and his victim shall be married.
Okay, this goes against the usual.
The pattern is broken. But it's just as horrifying, isn't it? It's D. The rapist and his victim shall be married. If a man finds a damsel that is a virgin who is not betrothed and lay hold on her and lie with her and they be found, then the man that lay with her shall give unto the damsel's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife, because he hath humbled her. He may not put her away all his days. Deuteronomy 22:28-29.
So remember this, ladies.
And finally.
Remember this, unmarried guys.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, hey.
You want to get married? Bible tells you what to do.
If you can catch them, you can keep them.
That's right.
You bought it.
Let's remind everyone, this is the fine, beautiful religion of love and honor and respect and tolerance.
Oh, but that's just
that,
the Old Testament.
That is either the same as Islam or in marked contrast to Islam, according to our Attorney General.
Right.
Depending on what day of the week it is.
What's the punishment for not being one of God's chosen people?
That is the eternal hellfire.
Yeah.
What did Jesus do to those who failed to sell all their possessions and give every dime to the Lord? Is it A, nothing? That would have constituted socialism, and Jesus is not in favor of socialism. B, nothing. Jesus does not punish people for greed. They should simply repent. C, Jesus strikes them dead. Or D, Jesus causes them to lose their wealth in the future.
That's a tough one.
Is it?
He wouldn't strike them dead, would he?
Is that your guess? You going to go out on a limb?
Sure, I'll go out on a limb.
Correct answer,
all
C,
right.
Jesus strikes them dead. But a certain man named Ananias, with Sapphira his wife, sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Ghost and to keep back part of the price of the land? And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the ghost, and great fear came on all of them who heard these
things.
We
understand Eus has been holding out on us.
That's right.
Then fell Sapphira straightaway at Peter's feet and yielded up the ghost, and the young men came in and found her dead and carried her forth. buried her wow. by her husband.
There you go.
Struck dead. Yes.
That's a real nice life you have there. Struck dead. It would be a shame if something was to happen to it.
Nice immortal soul.
Yeah.
Souls
this,
burn.
This is the good religion.
Yeah. Yeah.
This one, right? Either that, or this is just as good as Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Depending on what Ashcroft has to say that day.
Yeah.
Now, lest you think that was funny enough, and evil and horrifying enough,
what could be more evil and horrifying?
Arg!
Uh-oh.
Are we still going to talk about September 11th?
We are talking about September 11th.
Okay, just making
sure. We are talking about the two major religions involved in I guess three.
Yeah.
Because Judaism counts. It's certainly involved in the hassle. Some people say, them terrorists, that wasn't real Islam.
Right.
We've sort of dealt with that.
Yeah.
Some people say,
Scottish.
You know, Islam is an evil religion, and Christianity is good. And other people say, Christianity and Islam, oh, they're both good. Well, we can't really speak to Islam, right? What we can say is, man, if Islam is worse than Christianity, it must be pretty horrible.
And if it is, it can't be by much.
You know, I was gonna read this this fine death toll.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't.
Oh.
Because I'm missing a page.
Oh.
You want to hear just part of it? Because I got the total. I'll just give you the total, right?
Okay.
There used to be a great website called godkill.htm. That had this, somebody went through the Bible,
right.
And they wrote down every single time in the Bible that God either directly, personally killed somebody, was given direct personal credit,
right,
or every time that God told somebody, go kill somebody else,
right?
And they added them all up.
Yeah. It's hard to add up because some of them are uncounted.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
This just says the whole city, you know. It's like, we don't know how many were there.
Yes, right.
But what is it?
The number is, and this is scary because it's one of those Kabbalistic looking numbers that you think that maybe they put it in there on purpose. More than 399,933 people killed by God, going only on the numbers listed and not counting, say, the entire population of the world at the time of Noah.
Right.
Minus Noah and his family. Three cities and other such things that were not enumerated in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Now, wait, I'm sorry.
I'm missing part of my article.
Yeah.
That, I think, is the people... That's almost 400,000 killed on God's orders.
Right.
Including all the ones that God himself is said to have personally killed, more than, when we say more, we mean plus the entire population of the earth
right.
at Noah's time, plus at least three cities where they didn't say how many. The total is more than 2 million.
Wow.
Hmm.
This is according to the Bible.
Osama bin Laden's a piker.
So, gee.
Now, wait a minute. How many did Satan kill?
Not three cities. 65 cities.
65 cities.
Plus the population of the earth at the time of Noah.
Right.
Oh, and don't forget, Satan killed Job's children after God told him that he could. We don't know exactly how many, but it's not going to be 2 million.
No.
Right? Job's kids, a handful, you know, maybe a dozen if he had a really big family. Satan, 12 people. God, 2 million people.
Pick your poison.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I guess maybe we could go on to some news.
Well.
I've pretty much had mine.
I've got a little more to say on this subject, actually.
Please, go ahead.
This is from... Well, you mentioned before that they never speak out against
Yeah, I mentioned that.
Against the hardcore religionists.
You mean like your mainstream religionists?
Yeah.
Very rarely do.
Yeah, but they do, and I think this is a point that got lost sometime after September 11th.
Yeah.
Because if you'll recall, people were on a tear to blame all Muslims for everything for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that...
understandable overreaction, yes.
Yeah.
To the point that there were assaults and death threats mm-hmm. and harassment against all people who even looked Middle Eastern. And, you know, just about everybody who got lashed out against uh-huh. was innocent.
Yeah,
right. And in many cases, the victims weren't even the right ethnicity. They were Pakistani or Indian, and they practiced Hinduism or something
yeah.
else.
Uh-huh.
Franklin Graham, after sometime in 2002, I think. Yeah, in 2002, Franklin Graham, who is Billy Graham's son, told uh-huh. us that all Islamic people...
He's not Billy's grandson.
No.
He's son. Billy Graham's son.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I was having trouble with that.
Billy's grandson.
He said, all Islamic people scare me, and the silence of the Islamic clerics around the world is frightening to me. But, in fact, there were hundreds of Muslim leaders from around the world who issued public statements
right,
denouncing the actions of the terrorists. And yet, Franklin Graham ignored this fact and said, how come they haven't come to this country? How come they haven't apologized to the American people? Ashraf Sabrin, a medical technician who volunteered for the relief efforts at the Twin Towers and the Pentagon, said, we've had so many different events, open houses, candlelight vigils, national press releases. What's it going to take, exactly? And ironically, Franklin Graham's false sweeping generalization about Muslims came up shortly after the publication of a book that he wrote, which included the following claim. Islam, unlike Christianity, has among its basic tenets a deep intolerance for those who follow other faiths.
What? Wow.
That's just beautiful.
Christianity doesn't have that?
No, they're just intolerant.
The thou shalt not suffer a witch to live thing. That wasn't talking about...
That's tolerance.
That's not talking about people with different beliefs.
It's especially amusing because Franklin Graham said that all Muslims scare him.
Yeah.
And then went on to... And
right.
This was after he wrote the book, saying uh-huh. that Christianity yeah. does not have this deep intolerance.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
it's not intolerance, it's a raging xenophobia.
Wow, I'm gonna make a comment in the guy's defense. Being scared is not necessarily the same as being intolerant of. I think Billy Graham's son is intolerant of them. There are other examples. I mean, simply saying that your religion is better than theirs because yours is tolerant and theirs isn't is itself an act of intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when you say your religion is tolerant and it's not tolerant,
right?
Because anybody can read the damn thing and see what it says.
Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, again, I'll just repeat that I think we should draw a distinction between people who just follow whatever religion they happen to have because they've been taught it that way and because they've always practiced it, which frankly is, at least somewhere, probably 90% of the planet.
Yeah.
And people who take it so seriously that they're willing to kill or die for it.
I draw that distinction, but I fail to see how it's that big of a deal. I have a serious problem with liberal Christians. And it's, they rarely speak out. I mean, the liberal Christians ought to be, marching in great processions down the street criticizing fundamentalists in this country. And they're not doing it.
Yeah.
They'll occasionally say, they think that they're off base. Not enough. And more importantly, if they're going to use that same damn holy book
mm-hmm.
that has the comments in it that the fundamentalists take literally, but which the liberal Christians say, oh, well, that's slanderous. Our God would never act like that. They don't take them out of their damn holy book. When liberal Christians finally take a stand and edit their own holy book, so their god is no longer described in their own holy book as doing these horrifying things. Whether they believe that it's true or not, whether they take it seriously or not, I don't care. You're perpetuating that crap. You're perpetuating the veneration of that crap by leaving it in your book. Fix that if you want my respect. That's what I have to say to liberal Christians.
Good point.
More fallout from September 11th. I got another news thing. Unless you want to go, Dennis.
No, go for it.
Judge rules in Koran lawsuit. This is just a few days ago. A federal lawsuit that drew a whirl of attention to the university's summer reading program. You know, I've lost track of what university this was. Maybe it'll come up in the story. A federal lawsuit that drew a whirl of attention to the university's summer reading program 2 years ago has been dismissed in its entirety. The decision by U.S. District Court Judge N. Carlton Tilley Jr. marks an end to a fiery fight that propelled UNC. What's UNC? University of North Carolina?
Sounds like it.
Okay. Into a nationwide debate about academic freedom and the separation between church and state. The 2002 Carolina summer reading program selection, Approaching the Quran, the Early Revelations, translated and introduced by Michael Sells, spurred a lawsuit in July 2002. The five plaintiffs, and this was, I remember this story, this university instituted this program where they wanted to promote tolerance and understanding between people of different religious backgrounds. So they originally required all new students to read this book. The five plaintiffs, including three UNC students, claimed that the reading, a collection and analysis of 35 surahs, short passages from the chief holy book of Islam, violated the separation between church and state and was a form of religious indoctrination. UNC originally required all incoming students to read the book and write a response paper, but later stated that students with religious objections did not need to read the book. The suit bounced from Greensboro Federal Court to the Fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond and settled back into the Greensboro Court by fall 2002. The court declined to issue a preliminary injunction of the program and dismissed any related claims of the program that the program violated the Establishment Clause of the U.S. Constitution. The final claim, which stated that the university had violated the Free Exercise Clause of the Constitution by authorizing and requiring the reading and discussing of the book, was dismissed July 7th. Now, I don't know. It seems to me, if any university said, here's a book discussing 35 passages from the Bible, and they say originally that, everybody coming in has to read this and write an essay, and later back down and say, well, you don't have to write the essay, or you don't have to read it and write the essay if you have religious objections, right? I think we'd be sitting here up in arms about them trying to shoehorn Christianity into this public education.
Repeat what the topic of the essay was one more time.
It doesn't say. You could, it says, write a, you had to write
response
a
paper.
Response. It doesn't say about what.
Okay. So, I mean, I had humanities classes in college.
Yeah.
We studied a lot of different subjects, and one of them was the Bible. And I wrote many papers in that class that were basically tearing down parts of the Bible that we were assigned to read.
Uh-huh.
And biblical apologetics from the first few centuries, such as St. Augustine.
Uh-huh.
And I got very good grades on those papers. I don't have any objection to studying.
But that's a humanities class.
Yeah.
That was one of many books you were required to read. This isn't even part of
the
course.
However, one entire course was about early Christianity.
About early Christianity or about the Bible?
About the actual Bible, I think, and early Christianity.
Okay. So why is that okay? Where's the line, and why doesn't that cross it? That's what I want to know.
You should be able to study anything.
Right.
There's a difference between...
Study a religion.
Okay. I think that's the response that the judge came up with.
Yeah.
Right. And to flip your theoretical outrage around, if it had been a Christian subject, if the subject had been the Bible and not the Koran, then
right.
the same Christians who are now upset about it would be thrilled.
Yeah.
They would say that this is a great course and everybody should
attack it. But of course they would be phoning in death threats to somebody who came out.
Right.
Said,
and I think the line is that they should all be treated the same. That we either say, okay, it's okay to teach about religions in general, even if it's one specific thing, or it's not okay to teach about any of them.
Okay. I think you are right on target. Tilly, that's the judge, wrote that the university did not affirm any religious beliefs, lend its support to either side of the controversy, discriminate based on religious views or status, or punish the expression of religious beliefs. Quote, students who were not members of the Islamic faith, probably the great majority of students, were neither asked nor forced to give up their own beliefs or to compromise their own beliefs in order to discuss the patterns, language, history, and cultural significance of the Quran. Yeah. The decision marks a victory for both parties in the suit.
No, it doesn't.
That's what it says. The university preserved its right to academic freedom and civil discourse at UNC, but changed the mandatory requirements of the program. But, from what the judge says here, he doesn't say that it's not a violation of the separation of church and state because it wasn't mandatory. Not being mandatory isn't one of the conditions he puts.
Right.
It's
maybe the university
neither asked nor forced to give up their own beliefs. Yeah, the university did that, but the judge does not say because it was optional, therefore it wasn't a violation. I mean, we could not have an optional yet official Christianity class in our public schools.
Right.
Just making it optional is not the issue. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're
saying. And the judge doesn't say because it's optional it's okay. The judge says it's okay because you're not asked or forced to give up your own beliefs.
You mean we couldn't have a class...
Or to compromise your beliefs...
We couldn't have a class pushing how to be a good Christian.
Right.
We could have a class studying Christianity, but...
Yeah.
As long as... As long as it's not indoctrination.
Right. For instance, I go back to something my stepdaughter told me a couple years ago, or maybe it was just last year, I don't remember, but she said that... There was a theoretically optional pray around the flagpole thing that was not sponsored by the school, supposedly.
Yeah.
Except that her PE coach, who she had first thing in the morning, said, I want everybody to show up, and if you don't show up, then you either have to do push-ups and extra laps, or you have to come to me and tell me that you have a religious problem in front of the class.
Uh-huh.
Basically.
Right. Right. And that's coercion.
Right.
That's coercion. But if there was a how to be a good Christian class and the school said, well, it's not mandatory.
Right.
We still couldn't have it.
Right.
It's, we still couldn't have it.
Couldn't have.
The school could not be in a position
money
of
paying
turning
that.
People into good little Christians. All right. So that's interesting. But there's some fallout from 9/11 that has only now gotten... straightened out. But again, it ties into this whole, understanding the Muslims thing. I wish I did understand Muslims more. I think that's a fine thing, but I'm very concerned that it's blurring the real issues. That with all this concern over, well, we don't want to just be biased against Muslims, that there are some real issues about the dangers of religion in general that are being ignored.
I have a book review that I think you'll like.
Great.
This is a book that was published just a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called The End of Faith Against Toleration. I've now seen book reviews in both the New York Times and The Economist, and I'm interested in reading it.
Uh-huh.
The review says, "It's not often that I see my florid strain of atheism expressed in any document this side of the Seine, but The End of Faith articulates the dangers and absurdities of organized religion so fiercely and so fearlessly that I felt relieved as I read it, vindicated, almost personally understood. Sam Harris presents major religious systems like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam as forms of socially sanctioned lunacy. Their mm-hmm. fundamental tenets and ritual irrational, archaic, and important when it comes to matters of humanity's long-term survival, mutually incompatible. A doctoral candidate in neuroscience at the University of California, Los Angeles, Harris writes, what a sizable number of us think, but few are willing to say in contemporary America. We have names for people who have many beliefs for which there is no rational justification. When their beliefs are extremely common, we call them religious. Otherwise, they are likely to be called mad, psychotic, or delusional. To cite but one example, Jesus Christ, who, as it turns out, was born of a virgin, cheated death, and rose bodily into the heavens, can now be eaten in the form of a cracker.
Boy, oh, that's a nutshell.
A few Latin words spoken over your favorite burgundy, and you can drink his blood as well. Is there any doubt that a lone subscriber to these beliefs would be considered mad? The danger of religious faith, he continues, is that it allows otherwise normal human beings to reap the fruits of madness and consider them holy. Then the review goes on to say that he's probably pissed off many of the readers at this point.
Yeah.
He says that reaction in Harris's view is part of the problem. Criticizing a person's faith is currently taboo in every corner of our culture.
Yeah.
On this subject, liberals and conservatives have reached a rare consensus. Religious beliefs are simply beyond the scope of rational discourse. Criticizing a person's ideas about God and the afterlife is thought to be impolitic in a way that criticizing his ideas about physics or history is not. And it goes on to say, Harris reserves particular ire for religious moderates, those who have taken the apparent high road of pluralism, asserting the equal validity of all faiths, and who imagine that the path to peace will be paved once each of us has learned to respect the unjustified beliefs of others.
Well, the fighting might stop, but the problem would remain.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Religious moderates, he argue, are the ones who thwart all efforts to criticize religious literalism. By preaching tolerance, they become intolerant of any rational discussion of religion and betray faith and reason equally.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I agree.
Excellently put.
Now, I want to point out to people who plan to get this book that Harris winds up pushing some kind of Eastern mysticism.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And...
Did they talk about that in the review?
No, they just mention it a bit.
You read it?
How the hell does he get from what he just said
to
that?
I haven't read the book. But it says, Harris, no pure materialist, acknowledges the human need for a mystical dimension to life, and he conveys something of a Buddhist slant on the nature of consciousness and reality. But he believes that mysticism, like other forms of knowledge, can be approached rationally and explored with the tools of modern neuroscience without recourse to superstition and credulity. I kind of part company with him there.
Maybe. It depends how he says it.
Yeah,
I mean,
it does.
I can see ways of formulating that argument that I wouldn't have come to.
Anyway, somebody I know online read it and said it was a good book, despite all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so, once again, the title of that book is The End of Faith Against Toleration. No, The End of Faith, that's all.
It's not subtitled Against Toleration?
No, the review is subtitled Against Toleration.
Yeah. Well, there's some stuff that should not be tolerated.
Yep.
That where tolerating it is just, you know, silly and bad. But you got to carefully pick those, and I hope that
right.
we...
Well, I'm against a sort of blanket toleration of everything.
Right.
In this way, I actually sort of agree with fundamentalists. who frequently complain that people have this belief about toleration, that everything is okay, there is, you know, there is no way to tell between, I mean, what you believe is just as true for you as what I believe is true for me. I think that's bullshit.
Yes, that is complete and utter bullshit. Boy, we had a caller on the TV show.
2 weeks in a row.
Going after, the week I wasn't there.
You got him and I got him.
Yeah. The week I wasn't there, he called in while Russell was on, and then they put me on the air for like 30 seconds at the end of the show to challenge him to call back, and he did call back. Unfortunately, I missed a lot of what you said to him, Russell.
I've got that episode.
Do you? I was on the phone at that point and couldn't hear that exchange, but when I dealt with him, what this guy was doing was going after what he termed Western reductionist science.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just could not get him pinned down on what exactly was the problem. What is it about Westernism or reductionism that he didn't like? When I asked him what's wrong with Western reductionist science, he basically just said, well, it's Western and it's reductionist. Well, I mean, and?
Yeah, your point?
And his whole thing seemed to be, well, you know, you guys are not open-minded enough. You've got your minds made up about things. Well, yeah, the point of learning stuff is so you can make up your mind. Not so that you can become omniscient, but so that you can make up your mind. And the question is, are you making up your mind on the basis of a sufficient amount of evidence or not? And he was just having none of it. But he wanted, that at some point he started playing the, well, we really all agree card. No, we didn't really all agree. And he also wanted to play the, oh, well, I accused you of being closed-minded, but now that you're telling me that you are open-minded, I'm taking credit for having made you more open-minded.
Arg!
Yeah.
He was basically doing that. Drives me frickin' crazy.
Yeah, he did. To both of us, actually. He was like, okay, so we agree now.
No.
Yeah, no. You said this crazy thing, which you will now not take credit for, or explain, or defend. And then right after him, we had the bus lady. This lady calls in to talk about, wanted to call in to talk about her experience with angels.
Oh, yeah.
You know what her experience with angels was? She was driving a school bus, she claimed. In the pouring down rain.
Yeah, that's the person I want driving.
And it was coming down so hard she couldn't see her exit. And she had to switch lanes. And she prayed to the angels to help her. And the rain stopped and she was able to see her lane and get out of the highway traffic safely. And I said, where was the angel? And she said, I visualized him. Now, this is Austin, Texas. I don't know what it's like in other parts of the country. I've noticed more in Austin, Texas. We have these bizarre little tiny thunderstorms.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really common to be driving down the highway in Austin, have a thunderstorm pouring down on you for like 10 minutes, and then suddenly stop.
Right. You drive out from under it, or...
Yeah. It's like, it's just not miraculous.
No.
Yeah.
Nor was her next claim, which was that she needed air in her car tire, and she went to a gas station and prayed to the angels that there'd be somebody there who could help her, and there was. There was somebody at the gas station who knew how to put air in her tire.
I thought she said that somebody actually showed up at that moment, came out of the gas station and says, hey, looks like you're having some trouble.
Yes, she said that, and then she went on further to claim that she went to some other person after that and said, well, I want to thank that man that helped me with my tire. I don't know why she didn't thank him while he was helping her. Apparently,
probably
she let him,
busy thanking the angels.
She let him get away, and then she went and found some other person and said, I want to thank that person who helped me with my tires. And the person she went to said, I didn't see anybody help you with your tires.
Oh, so
it's a miracle.
It was a miracle.
So he was in, you know, she doesn't say that person, the third person was standing right there and never saw the guy that helped me with my tires. It was just so pathetic.
One of the questions is, do we want people like this driving school buses?
No, I got the impression she was old and retired now.
Okay, good.
Luckily. No, we don't. We don't. But we have a culture where people can walk around, believe in this kind of crap, and not be called crazy.
Yeah, and you can handily eat them in the form of a cracker.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Hey, my God, edible.
Dennis, are you ready to do your news story?
I guess yet? So. It's kind of strange. It's a man arrested in biotech lab explosion. A Framingham man in Watertown, Massachusetts, was ordered held without bail on Wednesday after pleading innocent to charges he planted a pipe bomb at a biotech company's offices last week. At Waltham District Court, Brad Carger, 29, was arraigned on charges of placing an explosive device and arson at the Waterton offices of Amaranth Bio, said Melissa Sherman of the Middlesex District Attorney's Office. Authorities said Carger tried to blow up another company's offices a year and a half ago in the same building. The pipe bomb exploded at about 3:41 a.m. last Thursday in a lab area at Amaranth Bio. The explosion shattered windows but caused no injuries. Carger was ordered held without bail pending a dangerousness hearing on September 9th. At that time, Judge Tobin Harvey will also decide whether to revoke Carger's bail as he awaits trial on the earlier charges.
And that was supposed to happen on the 9th.
Right.
Yeah, we just got the story last night.
We don't know what's going on yet. According to prosecutors, a year and a half ago, Carger opened three gas valves in the microbiology laboratory of Vicam, then lit a Bunsen burner and fled. Carger worked at Vicam at the time. Carger had been on an electronic monitoring bracelet while awaiting trial in Middlesex Superior Court in October, but court records show that a judge ordered it removed last month after he posted $5,000 cash bail. Now, taken by itself, this is, you know,
just some lone coup.
Just some lone coup. But given given today's atmosphere.
Yeah.
This clearly falls under the terrorism descriptions that anyone, you know, that the Homeland Security, Homeland Security is prepared to describe anything as terrorism, and this certainly fits the bill.
You would say.
Why was this not mentioned as terrorism anywhere in this?
Don't know.
And also, people say it took some doing to get this story.
It's not getting a lot of coverage.
Yeah, it's
and
not
also, I noticed there
coverage.
Is
and
no
it's clearly a terrorist act.
There is no exploration of his motives.
Right.
We don't know who this guy is, where he came from, whether he ever said anything about why he wanted to blow up biotech facilities. Perhaps he's from the future.
Yeah. Now, of course, you know
when.
There's a number of explanations for this. And,
he was from the future.
He was from the future, right. That would be the obvious one you'd instantly go for at first. But,
sorry.
But if I was a conspiracy theorist, I would go, well, this isn't getting any coverage and isn't called terrorism because he's blowing up something that George Bush doesn't like.
Yeah, but you're not a conspiracy theorist.
But I'm not a conspiracy theorist, that can't be it. So take this article for what for what it is.
Yeah, I see your point. Here we have all of the earmarks of terrorism.
Right, and no mention.
Why is it not being treated like terrorism? And I would say, more importantly, from my perspective, because I don't really want us to be over-eagerly calling stuff terrorism. I really want to know why this guy is doing what he's done. He's got a sequence of jobs he's worked at now where he has or he's trying to blow stuff up. I'm amazed he got work again.
He's trying to blow stuff up twice. That's two acts of terrorism.
Right. At that, at
and he's not labeled a terrorist yet. So I don't know what the deal is.
Very, very odd. Well, we did the Quran
lawsuit.
About 10
more minutes. Can I do a quick political update?
Go for it. Sure.
Dick Cheney's been acting crazy all week.
Has he? I mean, crazier than usual?
Crazier than usual, I think, but only because he's not out there very much in the campaign.
Okay.
So when he does come out there, he seems particularly crazy because, well, he...
We don't get used to it.
What's he done this time?
A couple of days ago, he said in an interview, this is my... my impression of Al Franken doing an impression of Dick Cheney. it's absolutely essential that 8 weeks from today, on November 2nd, we make the right choice, because if we make the wrong choice, then the danger is that we'll get hit again, and we'll be hit in a way that will be devastating. So either Cheney has just personally threatened the United States with being hit hard if they don't elect him and George Bush, which would make him a terrorist, or he's just made an astounding prediction of the way things will turn out if Kerry becomes president. And, of course, we are the nonprofits, so it's relevant because we don't make predictions like that. They're stupid.
Whoa.
And
vote for us, or the terrorists win.
Vote for us, or die.
It should not be missed that this is the administration that had no clue we were going to be hit the last time.
Right.
Apparently, somehow between then and now, in the last 3 years, Cheney has acquired remarkable psychic abilities.
Yeah.
Or the intelligence community has improved its execrable...
Or he pays attention to the intelligence
community. What would the intelligence have to be that would establish that if the Republicans win, we won't be attacked again, but if the Democrats win, we will?
Wow,
perhaps
that's pretty damn specific.
Perhaps they received some sort of briefing that said, Osama bin Laden determined to strike in the United States, but only if George Bush is not reelected.
Mr. President, it's Osama.
No, it's something like, well, during the Democratic convention, Osama's pizza orders increased. And during the Republican convention, it didn't.
Hmm.
So he must be planning something during the,
something
if
like
the Democrats
that.
Win.
And then just yesterday, he weighed in on the economy.
Oh, yeah.
Indicators measure the nation's unemployment rate, consumer spending, and other economic milestones, but Vice President Dick Cheney said it misses the hundreds of thousands who make money...
What?
...selling on eBay.
Wow.
Oh.
That's a source that didn't even exist 10 years ago, Cheney told an audience in Cincinnati on Thursday. 400,000 people make some money trading on eBay.
Was it followed by stunned silence and then a burst of laughter?
I would imagine that it was, but the story doesn't mention that.
It wouldn't be, Dennis, because they don't go places to talk anymore where they don't have an audience of entirely, you know, duped psychophants.
In fact,
good point.
One of the three scheduled presidential debates was being canceled.
Yes.
Because George Bush expressed concerns about how there might be some people in the audience who are not independent as they're all supposed to be. There might be some Democrats in the audience.
Is that the rule for these debates?
I don't know what the rule is.
That's crazy. Oh, good grief.
I don't even know a story about that.
That might be
standard. I have no idea. That might be standard that you stock the audience in a debate with all people who say that they're undecided. But what? Why would the third one be the one where it would they? You know, maybe.
And
some
why would he pick out Democrats?
He has
personal
experience.
Are just as likely.
I think the three debates have different formats, and one of them had a live audience of some sort that the others didn't, or something like that.
Huh.
Anyway,
Bush does have personal experience with the cleverness of Democratic protesters.
Stick him in the free speech zone in some sewer somewhere. Yeah.
To get to the zinger that Edwards delivered Cheney's eBay speech, which was, hey, if we only included bake sales and how much money kids make at lemonade stands, this economy would really be cooking.
Yeah.
eBay is not... You don't bring money into the economy by selling antiques.
Yeah.
All that does is swirl money around, you know, among people that collect that stuff.
Unless you're selling a lot more stuff on eBay to people in other countries.
Oh, I see.
God. In which case, eBayers are actually helping to reduce the trade imbalance.
So, like those really important Yu-Gi-Oh cards, or early editions of Lord of the Rings, or things like that. Those are all going to other countries.
Maybe.
Man.
Wow, that's quite astonishing. The man's nuts.
Yeah, he's crazy.
So
that's a good one. Stunned silence here, folks.
Dennis, you've got something to say there about a scientific theory.
Yeah. Well, we've all heard about the anthropic principle. Well, I'm here to present the misanthropic principle.
What's the misanthropic principle?
The misanthropic principle.
Well, I guess we should let's
a brief description of the anthropic principle.
Yes,
we have 5 minutes.
The anthropic principle suggests that the universe is fine-tuned to allow the existence of life, such as ourselves, and that fine-tuning can only be the result of intelligent intervention.
Mm. Okay.
Now, it talks about the balance of physical forces and how they have to be exactly this way to allow us to exist. Now, the misanthropic principle is that, well, by volume, 99.999999999999% of the universe is inimically hostile to any form of life. It's hard vacuum or hard radiation or whatever. The only reason we survive is by sheer luck.
I think that perhaps an argument could be made that this would be evidence that the universe is designed to accommodate creatures that live in a hard vacuum.
That's true.
Just not humans.
That's true, and it seems to be designed to kill us.
That would fit the name of your theory.
It's designed to kill us, but there's a little corner that we managed to find.
I'm basing this on entropy, but anything that is alive needs to burn up energy, in order to continue living, it needs a constant supply of new energy.
Eventually.
Which you can't get in a vacuum because there's no matter out there and nothing to produce energy with.
Well, also, given the time frame of the universe, it'll all run down and there'll be no living things.
Right.
Well, that too.
So clearly, if it was carefully tuned to have these characteristics, it was carefully tuned to have vast quantities of empty space with nothing going on, and eventually even less going on.
So there you have it.
Yeah,
it's a theory, which is mine.
That's quite a theory you've got there, Dennis. I've always been bothered by the anthropic principle, just the idea that we're going to make ourselves the standard by which to judge the way the universe is.
Right.
I mean, what makes us that criteria?
Right. Our own ego. See, the universe was hostile to life at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Much, much more hostile to life in the middle. And then even more hostile at the end. And that is my theory.
Okay, Dennis. Ladies and gentlemen, Dennis Elk. Okay.
Probably no one listening gets that.
Monty Python reference. I think there's a lot of we have a lot of clever listeners that know more Monty Python backward and forward. Okay, so it's been a fine show. Let's take the last minute of the show to express our condolences on this anniversary to all of the survivors of the all the relatives left behind by the victims of the terrorist attacks.
Friends and relatives. Heaven.
We certainly, while we have poked some fun here tonight, we are certainly not poking fun at those folks who are victims. I just think that there's lessons to be learned here, and I don't see our culture really learning them. I see our culture screwing around with a bunch of digressions that miss the point.
The solution to more religion? More religion, apparently.
Apparently so. Thanks for listening. We will be
Of you who managed to listen live.
Yeah, well, and also to any of you listening to this recorded, we will be back again with our next live show on the 25th.
Wow, you're keeping track of it now.
Well, 11 plus 14 is 25, so it would be the 25th. And take it easy. We'll see you all later.
Bye, everyone.
Farewell.